Good evening, everyone. I'm Lino Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. The Young African Leaders Initiative just wrapped up 6 weeks of training with the young fellows. The initiative, also known as YALI, is a signature effort to invest in the next generation of African leaders. Nearly one in three Africans are between the ages of 10 and 24, and approximately 60% of Africa's total population is below the age of 35. Launched YALI in 2010 to support young African leaders as they spur growth and prosperity, strengthen democratic governance, and enhance peace and security across Africa. Today we have a one-on-one discussion with one of the 2018 YALI fellows. His name is Samuel Fela Johnson. Samuel is a native from Liberia and has over 6 years of progressive experience in the field of social protection, specifically focusing on program development, advocacy, and the promotion of policies designed to address the needs of Liberia vulnerable population. Currently, Samuel works as a with the government in Liberia in Governance and Decentralization Unit, Department of Policy, Planning and M&E, Ministry of Health, Congo Town, Montserrado. And that's a lot. Samuel, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Leno. Thank you very much.
And it's I didn't even read all of your bio. You are a young fellow and your bio is older than you. It's so good to have you on the program. So, first and foremost, tell us about YALI, because that's where it all started when I met you. Tell us about this initiative. You are a fellow. How did you get recruited? I know you work in the health sector, which is one of the reasons we have you here. But before we get to your work, let's talk about what took you to this point in the United States. And you are joining us from Minnesota.
No, Arizona, Phoenix.
Arizona, two different states, of course. I know that. Yeah. And so what is happening is all the fellows completed 6 weeks of training, and then some of the fellows were recruited to do some internships within the United States to stay behind and for internships, and you are one of the fellows that were selected for internships. So tell us about your journey from Liberia to becoming a YALI fellow.
Yeah, thank you very much again. Good morning from Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah, I'm excited. I met you on Saturday in D.C., and I'm grateful that you've arranged this interview. Well, my journey from Liberia to the U.S. has been quite miraculous. Let me say this. As a matter of fact, I applied for the YALI previously, and I was shortlisted for interview, and I did not make it. And speaking more about the YALI, like you said, YALI is an initiative by former President Barack Obama to allow young Africans or aspiring young African leaders to be able to gain requisite skills in their respective occupations in order to go back and contribute to the development processes of their country. So since 2010, about 3,700 African fellows have participated in the Mandela Washington Fellowship. Mm-hmm. And I started my own work in my country about a couple of years ago through the Ministry of Health and Social Protection, Ministry of Health and Social Welfare then, until the social protection or the social welfare arm was expunged from the Ministry of Health and joined with the Ministry of Gender, becoming the Ministry of Gender, Children, and Social Protection. So I began my work there as a cadet through the National Youth Cadet Program, and that's how I actually rose up to as far as social welfare supervisor, and had an opportunity to go in Nigeria to do my master's and return, rejoin my department, and finally decided in 2016 to go back to my mother ministry, the Ministry of Health, as a capacity building officer in the Department of Policy Planning and M&E. It's been quite a healthy experience for me as a young person, trying in my own ways to contribute to the development drive of my country. As you may be aware, mm-hmm. Liberia had suffered a long year of civil crisis. And speaking more historically, the political chemistry of our country was actually what resulted to the civil war. So we have moved from a civil war country from a pariah country in 2003 and 15 years on. We are moving forward, more optimistic of a better Liberia. Like you said, of the stats concerning Africa, 60% of the population consists of young people in Liberia, up to 65%. So this is where we are, and we are hopeful that we can do well with the requisite knowledge and skills we've acquired. And you further said that, yes, 100 fellows were competitively selected to participate in the professional development training internship, and I'm just one of those lucky ones to be a part, and I'm currently serving at the Maricopa County Development or Department of Public Health here in Phoenix.
Okay.
I began my internship yesterday, and it's been quite exciting.
Very
nice. Cultural shock in the U.S.
Yes, of course, I can imagine, yeah?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So what is the, I mean, I'm sure there are many takeaways that you did get from your 6 weeks of intensive training, but what was something most significant for you after you completed 6 weeks? I mean, if out of, how many of you were there, like over 500, right?
We were 700 in total.
Yeah. And then you were one of 100 selected for internship, so I'm sure you did well. There is a reason for that. So what was significant for you during the 6 weeks of training?
Yeah. A host of things were really significant, but there's one important thing that really shocked me in terms of, you know, how the U.S. has tried to show the spirit of democracy and inclusion. In one of my sessions at Syracuse University, where I was placed in the public management track, to have seen a legislative ethics commission set up, you know, in New York, I was really shocked, because when I read through the clauses of these of that particular document, seeing the legislator, you know, bringing themselves to the public and saying you should be able to streamline and investigate me based on these things, I was really shocked, because I was really shocked, certainly. Like, some of the clauses provided in that document under the Legislative Ethics Commission are restricting legislators from even employing their own relatives in their respective offices, or even declaring their assets. It's something quite strange for me. I mean, I am in Liberia. In fact, our current president, George Manuel Wiya, the former soccer icon, after having declared that he would have declared his assets a couple of months ago, just recently declared his and has asked others to declare theirs. And it is a difficult thing, not just strange to Liberia or unique to Liberia, but for Africa. So to have read that and seen documents even signed by these people, it really shocked me.
Yeah, you know, there is a lot of lessons learned for everybody from everywhere. So yes, I mean, as a fellow, these are some of the experiences that the program actually is designed for, to inspire, to motivate, and to learn new things, like, right, new ways of doing things and different ways of leadership. So I'm glad you really was shocked positively, if I can say that. So now let's talk about something that you do, which is your work, which is why we're talking to you today, which is health, right? Now, you're from Liberia, and as you mentioned it, so rightfully so, that Liberia went through civil war, and then there was the Ebola crisis. Your country has gone through a few challenges, right? When you go through a civil war, one of the things that is clear very quickly is how much the health system is affected, because infrastructures get destroyed, people get displaced, and then just the access to basic care and basic health needs are difficult to meet. And it went on and on for years in your country. So as of today, can you give us a sense of where Liberia stands in terms of the health system? Because you just went through a very, very tough Ebola crisis. So coming out of that, what can you tell us? How do you assess the health system now?
Let me just put it very simply. While the civil war had divided us, I think Ebola really united us, because the country was hit by Ebola when we had a system that did not expect it, right? The system was already vulnerable prior to the Ebola, and Ebola further exposed the vulnerability of the system. In Liberia, thank God, Liberians worked so hard. We amalgamated efforts. We saw it that we needed to protect ourselves. This was an enemy that that was almost insurmountable, that we really needed to stand as a people. So, yes, we've moved on, and we have tried to strengthen the system. Like I said, the system was exposed. And over the last 4 years, we have tried to build a very strong, relatively strong emergency preparedness and surveillance system in Liberia. We are also training more people in the health sector. Although the current doctor-to-patient ratio in Liberia is relatively small, mm-hmm. but there is a gain if we look on from where we started after the conflict with the regime of former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, up to now, where we have like one doctor to 15,000 Liberians. It is an improvement, and some of these improvements only came as a result of what the Ebola did, you know, to Liberia. Mm-hmm. As you recall, over 11,000 persons were affected, and then a little over 4,000 persons died in Liberia, and up to 184 health workers died as a result of Ebola. So we are trying to strengthen our system. Funding has always been a problem. The lack of trained staff, you know, and trained health workforce has also been a problem. So following the Ebola, what the government of Liberia did was that the government crafted a document known as the National Health Investment Plan for rebuilding a resilient health system. That was developed in 2015, and it looks at 9 investment priorities, you know, in line, in consonant with the WHO. Mm-hmm. So my work is captured in one of those 9 investment areas, that is leadership and governance. We realize that the counties, you know, Liberia is divided into a political subdivision called counties, like the U.S., right? So the counties do not have the requisite training to be able to make health decisions for their, you know, for their people. So my own responsibility in the governance and decentralization unit is to help strengthen the capacity of governance structures, such as the county health board, the district health board, and the hospital boards. And these boards consist of people not just from the health sector, but from other sectors, such as the Ministry of Health, Civil Society, the Ministry of Education, Civil Society, the Ministry of Agri, and permanent youth and women representatives in the counties. So we are trying. The difficulties are there, but we are trying, and we think with the little intervention we have made, we are actually yearning some good results, uh-huh. because once these boards are well strengthened and they are meeting regularly, when there's an outbreak or an emergency in a particular county, the board quickly intervenes. The board is actually chaired by the superintendent of the county, so he was also the chief political leader in the county. So with his presence on the board, it makes intervention into health issue much easier as compared to previous time when the political leader was not really associated with the health sector.
Okay.
So I think we are trying as a country.
As a country, yes, and we can appreciate the efforts. And then there is much more to do, to be done, of course,
certainly.
Just like with many other aspects. Let's spend a couple of minutes on the Ebola outbreak, because right now there is a new outbreak in the Congo, the DRC. When the country was declared Ebola free about 2 weeks ago, and then 8 days later, which was last week, there was a new outbreak. So what are your thoughts on that, given where you guys came from, how much it took from you, and how much you had to give to get out of that crisis? What are your thoughts on what's going on in Congo?
Yeah, it's quite unfortunate for the people of Congo for what is going on, and I feel because as a Liberian, you know, a country that also went through such a situation, but the reoccurrence has much to do, I think, for my own observation, the reoccurrence of the Ebola has much to do with people's perception. Also in Liberia, when Liberia was declared Ebola free, I think in May 2014, the kind of time where Liberia was placed under observation, and there was a new outbreak, you know, of the Ebola. I think in September 2015, if I will get it right, until it was finally, you know, declared Ebola free in 2016 January,
and
so. The role of individuals or community members is very cardinal or crucial to getting rid of Ebola.
Yes.
You saw that in Liberia, Ebola had spread so widely because there was firstly a denial of the disease, and also traditional practices of beefing dead bodies that also really increased the spread of the virus. So once communities can be able to practice healthy health habits as delineated by WHO or the health authority in DRC, I think these measures can really help a long way in curtailing the EVD.
Okay.
But it is a very serious thing.
Yes, it is indeed. Okay, Samuel, we have to take a short break and we will continue our discussion. So hang on and we will be right back with you. And let me tell our listeners, and we appreciate your time with us. And we'll take a short break. Now it's time for the news with Anthony Brown.
The World Health Organization says preliminary laboratory results indicate a cluster of cases of the Ebola virus in North Kivu Province in the Democratic Republic of Congo, 100 kilometers from the Ugandan border. DRC's health ministry says the number of confirmed cases in the new outbreak has risen to 13, including 3 deaths. The latest outbreak was announced 8 days after the Ministry of Health declared the official end of an Ebola outbreak that killed 33 people. UN officials warned the deadly Ebola virus could be spread by refugees leaving the Democratic Republic of Congo's North Kivu province. A new study says regular exposure to even low levels of air pollution may cause changes to the heart similar to those in the early stages of heart failure. A study of 4,000 people in the UK found those who lived by loud, busy roads had larger hearts of average than those living in less polluted areas. A study of 4,000 people in the UK found those who lived by loud, busy roads had larger hearts on average than those who lived in less polluted areas. This was despite the fact that people in the study were exposed to pollution levels below the UK guidelines. Researchers called on the government to reduce air pollution more quickly. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight we have a special guest, a one-on-one with one of the young African leaders. He's from the YALI program. He's a YALI fellow, and his name is Samuel Fela Johnson. He currently works with Liberian Ministry of Health in the Governance and Decentralization Unit, Department of Policy, Planning, and MNE, Ministry of Health in Congo Town, Montserrado. Samuel, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you again.
Sure. So listen, we were talking about Ebola before the break, and you talked about the importance of communities in helping to tackle and address Ebola. Tell us about, very quickly, your personal experience. How did you leave it? How did you survive it?
Okay. Quite fortunately for me, I left Liberia in 2013 where I got a scholarship to do my master's in Nigeria. So I actually missed out on the Ebola.
Okay.
And I returned in 2015 when the virus had already probably, you know, subsided.
Mm-hmm. But, what about your family?
Certainly. My immediate family in Monrovia, fortunately for them, none of them were affected. But some external relatives in Lofa County, somewhere in bordering the border of Guinea, where the virus had first infiltrated Liberia, I was told that some of my immediate external family members were knocked down by the virus, and I also lost some very important friends as a result of the Ebola virus disease.
Mm.
So it's quite unfortunate because stories were told of how people were stigmatized. You see a child being avoided probably by an uncle or aunt. Because you know, he was seen. That was quite horrible for our country.
Mm-hmm.
And it is our prayer that the system, you know, does well in preparing itself for emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
And Liberians will also, you know, think about practicing more health habits, and you know, in to avoid the Ebola virus disease.
So would you say that the country is better prepared for not just about Ebola, but just in general when we look at disease outbreaks? Like, you know, in places you have cholera, you have measles and other diseases that are contagious, such as the Ebola virus. Do you think that after the crisis with Ebola, the country is better prepared for emergency?
Well, better prepared to handle emergency, if I would say that, then I would not be honestly speaking to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because in all candid admission, we are not, you know, very prepared as a country to. But I saw the intervention of the Ministry of Health some time ago when there was an outbreak of meningitis in one of the counties, and the Ministry of Health or the Liberian health system through the National Public Health Institute, which gets huge support from the CDC.
Mm-hmm.
It was able to intervene in that outbreak, and it did not spread to, you know, all parts, all the other counties. So with that intervention and learning from, you know, some of the success stories from that intervention, I think the country is a little bit up to prepare, you know, mm-hmm. or kind of prepared, you know, to put it more aptly for emergencies.
But okay.
There are still challenges. There are still challenges.
And what are some of those challenges?
One of the major challenges of our health system is the issue of roles.
Mm.
14 years of 15 years after the end of the conflict, Liberia is not really connected. And that is a serious challenge that is caught crossing. So if there's an outbreak in a town as far as probably Nizwen in one of the counties called Nima, sometimes getting access to the community is difficult for health workers. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why the virus spread, because if there is not an immediate intervention because of the contagious nature of the virus, other people get contacted. So the issue of rule is a very serious challenge in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And there are indications that the current leadership through the leadership of President George Manuel has shown commitment to developing our country through rules. And I think if that challenge is handled, it's going to help a long way, not just for the Ministry of Health, but for other sectors of the country. And within the health system itself, the issue of trained staff, you know, better health workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And I have realized that sometimes, you know, the resources are not really aligned for where they should be. So now there's concerted effort by the Ministry of Health and development partners to see that, you know, resources are pooled and they are aligned to priorities. And if that is talked to, I think there can be some improvement in the system. But the challenges
are, there are several.
As a country, as a struggling country with a very small budget, a little unknown citizenry in 40 million.
But listen, Samuel, there was, and you know, feel free to respond to this or not, but there were billions of dollars. A lot of money was raised and donated for post-Ebola recovery. I mean, there was money for Ebola during Ebola and also post-Ebola recovery. So any comments on what is happening?
Let me say, in fact, it's quite unfortunate I did not set the basis for my engagement with you. And let me say now that comments that I am coming out with or responses are personally my own.
Yes,
and in no way reflects the official comments from the Ministry of Health.
Yes.
But from my own observation, like I initially said, you know, alignment of resources has been a very serious thing in Liberia. Uh-huh. Yes, indeed, there was wastage, you know, like what, you know, particular resources that should go to some important things. They were not aligned to that, and that's also a challenge for our country, a very serious challenge. It's unfortunate that resources were misapplied, others squandered it as a matter of fact. Let me see here.
Okay, you're being honest.
that's
good. That's good. So, listen. Let's talk about your work. How is your work currently impacting the big picture in terms of improving the health system? I know you talked about your work earlier, but let's just specify a little bit.
Yes. Okay. Because those governance boards are basically composed of persons from within the counties. It has helped in order to help improve the county health system. I can speak to a particular county as an example of our Riverside County when the Cestos Bridge, you know, had a problem and people were not going across and you know, sick persons could not cross to the health facility because the bridge has spoiled.
Uh-huh.
I remember the county health board intervened so quickly, and you know, while it's true that it had to wait for resources, but because they were able to convene as a board and were able to make some great decisions, with the chairperson being the superintendent and the involvement of the Ministry of Transport and other youth and women groups in the community, their intervention helped in order to increase advocacy that government quickly provided funds.
Okay.
We have the bridge of six. So that's just a particular county. So in other counties, they are doing well on a daily basis to ensure that the issues pertaining to their counties are addressed.
Right.
Because the real intent of our job is to give ownership to the counties. So we are strengthening them in order for them to make the right decisions.
Samuel, listen, we're running out of time. We barely have 20 seconds. But I really want you to share your thoughts very quickly on how the Mandela Fellowship will affect your work moving forward, the kind of impact you can make thanks to this opportunity. Very quickly.
Okay, with the skills, the new skills, the knowledge, and the network I have built over the last 6 weeks in the U.S., I'm certain that I'm going to continuously positively impact my health system in one way and also impact my communities. And like any other African leader who participated in this Mandela Washington Fellowship, we have a burning urge to work so hard to make impact, you know, in our communities.
Okay. Okay. Samuel, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for the invite. Thank you.
And that was Samuel Faila Johnson, a Yali Fellow from Liberia. That's all for our show today. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington. I do know my name. And producer Jackson Mganyi was back. We're very happy to have him back. We have Anthony Brown with the news and our engineer, Alfredo, and production assistants, Ruth and Thomas. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day. This is VOA.